Good Show, Good Podcast. Subscribe to Podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. With the first pick from the University of Manitoba, Sportsnet selects Jeff Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Win, lose, or draw.
I've seen a dynasty die before my eyes once. That was the 2001 World Series when the Arizona Diamondbacks, Luis Gonzalez, walked off the Yankees with a Game 7 single off Mariano Rivera. Now, this was a time when the Yankees had won three consecutive World Series and won four or five. They were leading 2-1 going into the ninth. Rivera was on his second inning of work. I mean, this was in the shadows of 9/11, right? When a grieving country saw New York City and its most iconic franchise in a softer light. And I'll tell you, this was a great World Series. It already featured two extra inning games, two late inning comebacks, and a blowout. 15-2 for the Diamondbacks in Game 6. Yet despite that, right? Despite that Game 6 thumping, here were the Yankees where they often were. The ball in Rivera's hands, a lead. The safest of stories for Eastern Time Zone newspaper writers. They were beavering away in deadline, one eye on the clock, one eye in the field. And then it was gone. Poof. Over their head of a drawn-in infield, it barely made the damned outfield grass if you watch the replay. The Diamondbacks would win the game. I'd later call them McChampions. Good for a quick, guilty bite. But not something you'd want for a steady diet. And it's not as if the Yankees disappeared off the face of the earth, right? But Tino Martinez was gone. Paul O'Neill was gone. Even Scott Brosius left. You know, names and personalities from titles past, guys who'd been part of baseball's postseason meal for years. You know, I remember sitting in the press box in Arizona thinking there was a finality to that loss. You know, a finality that reached further down the road than simply the end of that season or the next season. The Yankees, I mean, again, they didn't disappear. They made it to the postseason again, but they failed to make it out of the ALDS four times. They lost the World Series to the Florida Marlins in 2003, and then they became the first team to blow a 3-0 lead in an AL Championship Series, losing to the Boston Red Sox in 2004. In 2009, the Yankees got back to the World Series, but nobody was all that giddy about it, right? I mean, who could be all that happy for a team that had Alex Rodriguez on it? And so, if I might be permitted to get ahead of myself here, I wonder whether or not I'll feel the same finality tonight if the Raptors end our anguish and give us our first crown in a major North American league since Joe Carter touched them all. Golden State Warriors have not only been a dominant team, in many ways, they've set the standard for the way a franchise should operate and talk and think, and the way players and a coach should conduct themselves while helping redefine the way the game is played. Yet there is a danger in signaling the end of the Warriors. After all, keep in mind that they did rebound from an NBA Finals loss to win the last two titles. But let's look ahead a bit. What if Kevin Durant leaves? What other dominoes will fall? And who will come in at a time when a new arena in Oakland promises an even greater revenue stream, but maybe kind of sap the Golden State Warriors of that mojo they got being in Oakland, you know, that special edge that came from being in Oakland. I mean, will Golden State still be viewed as the place for a title run last call? Or after this postseason, might a free agent or one of the game's big personalities be more inclined to, I don't know, check out where Kawhi Leonard ends up? So I remember thinking when the Yankees lost in 2001 that despite how it did smack of the end of something special, I wasn't too certain who would fill in or who would step in to fill that void, right? I knew it wouldn't be the Diamondbacks. And not that we should care in this city, but I have a feeling we might feel the same way after tonight should the Raptors win. But, you know, that's okay. Besides that, that's a story for another day. Like, maybe even tomorrow.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's
Jeff Blair.
Kawhi, Tim Reynolds with the Associated Press. Back there. You were on, of course, the Spurs team in 13 that was up 3-2. Then you guys were up 3-1. You closed it out in 14. Obviously, you have a chance to close out now. The fact that you've been in this situation a few times, is there anything that's different about a finals closeout game than trying to close one out in the first three rounds?
I mean, obviously, you're playing against a better team, championship team. That's pretty much the only difference of it. Other than a regular playoff game, you're just playing against a better team at that point in time.
Kawhi sure sounds worked up about this, doesn't he? Hello and welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. It is Monday, June 10th. Remember that date? You may be remembering that date for a long, long time. The Toronto Raptors hold a 3-1 lead going into tonight's Game 5 of the NBA Finals. We will have the game at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet. We'll have pregame coverage beginning at 6 with Tim and Sid. I will walk you through our special day of programming later on as the show gets going. The Raptors winning Game 4, 105-92 in Oakland. They beat down one of those games where the home crowd leaves early and the visiting fans filter down to the bottom bowl. It was remarkable. It reminded me a lot. In my little intro, I was talking about the 2001 World Series. It reminded me of that Game 6 beatdown that the Diamondbacks handed the Yankees 15-2. And as I said, the Yankees came back in Game 7. But, man, I don't know. If you listen to the national commentators and the guys who were there in Oakland on Friday night, they will tell you that, yes, it looks as if Kevin Durant is going to be back in the lineup tonight. But that Warriors team looked spent as they left the arena. And I'm beginning to think, and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the series, and I want to bring Eric Smith, our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, into the conversation. Eric, thanks so much for joining us this morning. You know, I'm beginning to think, and I made this point in Twitter. I'm not at all interested in the asterisk discussion because I think it's stupid. But I'm beginning to wonder if maybe the real thing here, the real thing at work here, in addition to the Raptors, is the fact that, you know what, Golden State's just played a hell of a lot of basketball over the past 4 years, and it may be catching up to them.
Yeah, I think that's part of it to some extent, Jeff, and. I'll also just echo the sentiments. I think any asterisk talk is completely foolish.
It drives me nuts. It's insane.
No, it's extremely short-sighted too in terms of the history of the sport, history of sports. Period. I mean, the Raptors can't help the team that's in front of them. They play that who's in front of them, and let alone the fact that, as I'm sure you agree, and many listeners would as well, we can go and sift through the remaining all-stars that Golden State has on their team, the remaining MVPs and finals MVPs, let alone the fact that, well, if we really want to cut to the chase and look at, one of the years that they won, there's no Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love on the other side. Another year that they won, they didn't have to deal with Chris Paul in the postseason before they got to the finals. Another year they didn't have to deal with Kawhi Leonard after he went down with the injury with the Spurs. I mean, the list goes on of marquee players that Golden State has not had to deal with en route to their three championships in 4 years. And to me, that doesn't taint anything that they've done. They were still a 3-1 series lead away from being back-to-back-to-back-to-back champions, winning four in a row. So this team has been on an incredible run. It might continue this year if they're able to recover from being down 3-1 right now. And I don't think any of those injuries factor into or diminish anything that they've done, certainly not in my eyes, and I don't think in the eyes of anybody that truly is a fan of the game and that follows the game and covers the game and everything else. So the Raptors, if they win this, they won this not just because of who they beat in the finals, no matter who was healthy, but they also won because they narrowly avoided being down 3-0 in the conference finals to Milwaukee and ripped off four straight wins and knocked out the guy that's going to be named MVP. You know, they won because they knocked off a team that I believe was fully capable of making the championship in seven games in the Philadelphia 76ers. It's part of what got you here that makes you a champion as well, not just the games in the finals matchup itself.
Eric, let's talk a little bit about Kevin Durant. If Kevin Durant does return tonight, And look, I'm one of those people who thought he's going to be back in game four. So I know he's been upgraded to questionable. But if he does return tonight, how does that impact what the Raptors will do defensively?
Obviously another major weapon on the floor, major weapon that you have to be concerned about. And I think it clearly changes a lot of your potential matchups. To this point, we've seen, you know, Kawhi Leonard on Andre Iguodala. We've seen Kawhi Leonard on Klay Thompson. I think that you would have to put Kawhi at times on Durant, certainly. I think Pascal Siakam would see some time on Durant, but then of course that's going to free up the rest of the floor. And that's been the issue that every team in the league has had now for the last, 3 years, trying to deal with the many weapons that are on the floor and who do you leave open, or can you afford to just guard each individual straight up? Can you afford to go man on man against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant? You know, do you play center field with one of your other positions, whether it be Marc Gasol trying to cheat off DeMarcus Cousins, who didn't look great in game four? Do you cheat off Andre Iguodala a little bit? Oh, yeah, by the way, he's the guy I was referencing as the finals MVP. That's the issue that many teams have had with this Golden State team, Jeff. And I think with Durant out there, even if he's not 100%, which I would assume he certainly isn't, even if he's back playing, he's not at the top of his game, but he's still a threat to go off at any point. And that certainly changes the complexion of what the defense does. I don't think you can afford to have Kawhi on him the entire game, because I think that could take a lot out of the tank for what he had on the offensive end. But he's been such a robot, such a machine to this point, I'd put nothing past him in a clinching game on his own floor. So to me, all bets are off. And the fact that Kawhi has done what he's done, I'll say the fact that Durant is out there, Jeff, it's certainly not a bad thing for Golden State. But I'm not worried if I'm the Raptors. I'm taking this saying, you know what? Durant or no Durant, we've been the better team in this series. We've certainly been the better defensive team in this series. And we have to trust in the fact that we have been playing arguably the best defense of the season over these last eight games, where we've taken on the two top seeds in each conference and gone 7-1. So even if you're plopping Durant back in the lineup, we're still going to be the better team. And I think if the Raptors right now kind of have that swagger and that business-like approach, that I don't see them being fazed by Durant simply being back out there.
And you know, to that point, Eric, I look at the Raptors and what they did on Friday night in Oakland. And this is the thing that I think maybe, I don't know if we're missing, but I think needs to be stressed a great deal. This team's getting better as the postseason has gone on. Like, they're certainly getting better as this finals have gone on, not just offensively, but defensively as well. They are literally improving in front of our eyes. And you know what? That is not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to consistently improve game after game after game the way the Raptors. I mean, I would argue, other than that loss to Golden State in the second game, they've won what? They've won 7 of 8. They've basically gotten better in every game.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because it was the theme of a lot of the questions that I was asking yesterday at practice to both the Warriors and the Raptors, but more specifically the Raptors. And it's pretty much bang on what you were just saying, how they've gotten better every game. And I asked, you know, point blank to Van Vliet, to Siakam, to Danny Green, amongst others, are you playing the best basketball of the season, and specifically the best defensive basketball? And most of them agreed. They all kind of said we had stretches over the course of the year where we thought we were pretty darn good. But right now, everybody seems to be so locked in. And I think that also speaks to, well, a couple of things. One, Marc Gasol now, who's kind of the quarterback to some degree on both ends of the floor, but as that man in the middle and as smart as he is defensively and a former defensive player of the year, the list goes on. We all know about that. It's been more than half a season now. If you combine regular season and playoffs, he's played almost 50 games as a Raptor. That counts for something. You know, when we talk about adding a guy mid-February and only having 20-odd games to kind of build that chemistry and get used to guys, and if you remember late in the regular season how much we were talking about, well, how often has he actually played with Lowry and Leonard together, because we were still doing the load management and there were other bumps and bruises for guys. But now when we combine this postseason, Jeff, we're talking about almost 50 games with Marc Gasol in the lineup. If we were having this conversation in January or February about the first season of Marc Gasol, and at the halfway point, halfway through the year, he looks pretty damn good. He looks like he fits in. Well, we're at that point right now. So hence the reason I think the Raptors' defense looks that much better, let alone the fact that you're not having any of the load management days for Kawhi. He's playing through things, let alone the fact that the chemistry, I think, is only intensified and built with the wins that have gone by and with the fact that, yeah, okay, you haven't had to deal with Durant, but you've been able to scout the competition as they've scouted you within a series itself, not seeing this Golden State team, you know, once every couple of months or twice in an entire season. So I think it all plays into it. But I also think that it's the collective mentality, and you've seen it, you've heard it, everybody else has as well that's listening. Nobody's getting ahead of themselves right now. And we had Pascal Siakam on the post-game radio show the other night after Game 4. That was before he went into the locker room. I believe Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry were doing interviews with the ABC and TSN broadcast, respectively. And the same answer was given, without consulting with one another, the same answer was given from all three, let alone then what we heard in the locker room. Job's not done yet. Mm-hmm. It's not time for celebrating. We haven't accomplished anything yet. You know, we still have to win that fourth game. We know how hard that fourth game is, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, yesterday, when I asked Fred VanVleet, I said, how hard is it to win that fourth game? He told me how hard it was to win Game 4. I had to follow up and say, sorry, Fred, maybe it was my bad grammar or English. I meant, how hard is it to win the fourth game of a series? Because he was so locked in on simply talking about Game 4 and not looking ahead to anything else until they get that win.
You know, way back, it was before Game 7 against Philly. One of the comments Leo Routens made, and I wrote it down at the time, is that, you know, one of the keys when you get an opponent down or when you're on a run the way Golden State was in the first half, one of the keys to keeping your opponent from coming back is to not let him get to the line, right? Because those are basically free points when you're losing. Clock ain't running. You get to the line, it's like, just give us 2 points. Game 4, the first half, the Raps were 10 for 11 from the line. The Warriors went maybe 2 for 5, 2 for 4. Look, this game has changed a great deal, but it's remarkable, isn't it, in the playoffs, how being consistent at the line is so, so important for a team. And the Raptors right now have the highest free throw percentage by a team through the first four games of an NBA Finals. It's 90%, Eric. 90%. The next closest is Golden State from last year at 85.5. Think about that, 90%.
The number I didn't even have. So kudos to you. I might steal that in Game 6. Hopefully there isn't a Game 6. But if there is, I'm stealing that one for our stat of the night, Jeff. It has been incredible to see what this team has done, taking full advantage of their opportunities. And I would say also in part of what you brought up, limiting free throws for the opponent as well. It's one thing that I thought was a potential storyline in Game 4, and it ended up not biting the Raptors because they played under control and with composure down the stretch. Part of the reason I bring that up, with about 5.5 minutes, if I want to be real precise, I think it was like 5:22 in the fourth quarter, the Raptors picked up their 15th foul, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. Mm-hmm. If this is a parade to the free throw line down the stretch, and we get, you know, we see Golden State get this down to single digits, they rip off a couple of threes, all of a sudden it's maybe a 5-4, 3-point game, and they've got a parade to the free throw line every time there's a whistle. This could be an issue. But to the Raptors' credit, they played with composure, they played under control. And the other thing, too, and I remember the conversation that you and I had after Game 2, the one thing the Raptors did in Game 3, certainly, and did in Game 4, as simple as it is, they made shots. And I will go back to that Game 2 conversation that you and I had, and I think I remember it word for word because they put a little clip up on Twitter, and I said, at the risk of pulling out the red and white pom-poms, I thought that Game 2 loss had more to do with Toronto missing shots than it did Golden State cranking up the defense. I think Toronto had a ton of opportunities and a ton of looks in that game, and that was the one game of the four where their percentage was poor, and yet we were all saying after the game, how in the hell did they almost win that game shooting under 40%? And it was right there for the taking. We could be talking about a Raptors sweep right now and getting ready for the parade tomorrow or something. This team has been the better team in the series. They've been the better team for probably 13 or at least 12 of the 16 quarters. And if they play with that same swagger and mindset going into tonight, I think it's going to be over.
interesting question was asked of Kyle yesterday. I think it was yesterday. But the question was kind of building off the impact Kawhi has had on this team. You know, the sort of the stony-faced Raptors, right? Everybody talks about, you talked about the, you know, what you heard in the locker room after game. Kendrick Perkins on Twitter after game three said the scariest thing to him was watching the Raptors walk off the court. Like, you know, big deal. When's game four? You know what I mean? Like, we're not celebrating. When's game four? Kyle was asked yesterday whether or not last year's team would have had the same sort of, I'm going to paraphrase, I think they were talking about emotional maturity at this year's team has. His answer was kind of interesting because it was kind of a yes, no answer. And I, you know, having watched this team, this is a different team emotionally. And it's not just because of Kawhi. I think you point out it's Marc Gasol as well. There is almost a yin and yang thing happening with those two guys.
I would say this, and everything you just said, I agree with it. It's Marc Gasol's impact. It's also Danny Green's impact. It's Kawhi Leonard's impact. And I think because of that, I don't know that it's fair to compare even the emotions, let alone the actual skill set and experience of this team to last year's team, even this year's team to 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago when the run began for the Raptors in the postseason. And because I think automatically people want to, and maybe I'm wrong in my assumption, but when I hear something like that, I assume, and I don't even know who the reporter was that asked the question. I was on the floor going around to the different, you know, pods and scrumming on the floor, not in the interview room yesterday. But I my mind automatically goes, well, somebody's wondering basically, you know, is it on DeMar then? Or could this team with DeMar and Kyle have got it done? And did it take Kawhi? Well, in a way, yeah. But that's not a knock, I don't think, on DeMar DeRozan, or it's not a knock on Kyle Lowry. Yep. When you in the offseason add an NBA champion, a Finals MVP, a Defensive Player of the Year, a multi-time All-Star, in addition to an All-Defensive Player in Danny Green, then mid-season add a multi-time All-Star, an All-Defensive Team Player, a multi-time All-Star in Marc Gasol, and you've got an extra year of experience for not just your already grizzled vet in Kyle Lowry, but an extra year of postseason experience against the best of the best in LeBron and company, for Pascal Siakam, for Norm Powell, for Fred VanVleet, for OG Anunoby, who started in the playoffs last year against LeBron, you're automatically going to be better. You're automatically going to be more mature and better suited for situations and just simply more talented from top to bottom and more balanced for what could come. No guarantee you're going to win, but when you do win, and you do advance to the second round, and you do advance to the conference finals, and you do advance to the NBA finals, it's that experience and those guys with that experience that help carry you through and help, you know, bring the maturity and the mindset to stay grounded in the moment. So, yeah, last year's team maybe wasn't ready for that, but when you add those type of character guys, that only aids you in being prepared for these moments.
Eric, good stuff. Look forward to your work today. Tonight, I should say, tip-off is at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario. You, Leo, Matt, the whole crew will be down there. Tim and Sid will be broadcasting live from Jurassic Park at 6 p.m. Raptors pregame with Russick and Goldberg on Sportsnet 590. The Fan at 7 p.m. Basketball Central. Brad Fay and Sherm Hamilton and Alvin Williams at 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Sportsnet 1, as I mentioned, tip-off after 9. Should be a great night. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. Look forward to seeing you down there.
Yeah, well, I have my ski goggles packed. I'm hoping to use them.
Yeah. You know one thing I'll give the NBA credit for? And I just realized it. Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. I like the fact that the boys hold off with the champagne until you win the title. I don't like the baseball thing of, you know, spraying champagne because you won the wild card. You know, woohoo, we're the fifth best team in baseball or in our league. Yeah, not having that. Should be fun tonight, Eric. Take care.
Wholeheartedly agree. Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. Eric Smith, our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, again, to get you set, we will have coverage all day long on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It will start with a four-hour good show with Ennis and Bunkus from 12 to 4. Of course, primetime sports will take you through to 7. We'll have a Raptors pregame show. And as I mentioned, we will have the game at 9 o'clock. on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet One. And the wrap will be presented by Comda.com with Russick and Goldberg right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, we will have you covered all day long. I will be at the game tonight, and I'm hoping that as part of this, Toronto fans will take part in the singing of the national anthem tonight. As a matter of fact, Faisal Kamisa reporting on Twitter that the Canadian anthem will be sung by the fans tonight at Scotiabank Arena. And I would presume that Nisha Sharma from Kitchener, Ontario, will be singing. Congratulations to Nisha Sharma and Kitchener. You're our official winner of lower bowl tickets to tonight's Game 5 of the NBA Finals between the Raptors and Warriors. This contest was brought to you in part by Tangerine, official bank of the Toronto Raptors and their fans. Stay tuned, because we will have more tickets to give away starting tomorrow. Keep an eye on sportsnet.ca/590 for more details. Of course, the Raptors win tonight. We can't get ahead of ourselves, can we? Yeah, I think we can, actually. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. All playoffs long, we've been going to the phone lines, we've been going to the text line. That is 590-590. And, just a simple question for you this morning. How confident are you that tomorrow morning we are going to be talking about the first NBA championship in franchise history? The first major North American title, with all due respect to MLS, the first major North American title in this city since 1993, when Joe Carter touched them all. 416-870-0590, *590, 590-590 is the text line. Clifton and Etobicoke already weighing in the text line. Dealing with the rigors and overcoming adversity is integral to being a champion. That aimed, no doubt, at the discussion about, I'm not even going to say asterisk. It's because nobody puts an asterisk beside a team in the NBA rule book when they win a championship, or the NBA record book when they win a championship. It's just this idea that somehow, in some ways, it will be less of a title because Kevin Durant was hurt for all these games. And I will credit the fact that I think most of the serious commentators in North America don't buy into that. Yeah, I mean, they're the Skip Baylesses and you know, of this world that you know, the hot take guys who'll buy into anything and, you know, suspend whatever intellect they have when it comes to discussing things like this. You know, there are some people who feel that way. But let's be realistic here. You beat the team you have in front of you. You know, all whatever cliche you want. You play with the hand you're dealt, all that good stuff. And I'll tell you what, if the Raptors do win this series, and five games over the Golden State Warriors is a beatdown. I mean, it really is. There is no other way to describe it. And I understand that when people, you know, talk about this, if the Raptors go on to win tonight, I'm sure people will say, you know, blah, 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 comma, you know, beat the Golden State Warriors, comma, who were without Kevin Durant. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with providing context. But providing context doesn't cheapen the result. And we've also got to be careful of that, right? Just because somebody mentions Kevin Durant doesn't mean that they're diminishing the accomplishment of the Toronto Raptors. It is a fact that Kevin Durant has not played through the first four games of this series. That's just a fact. It's not Kevin Durant played but wasn't any good, or Kevin Durant had one good game and had three lousy games. No, he hasn't played in this series. That is a fact. He is one of the best players in the NBA. I would say going into the postseason, probably considered the best player in the NBA. That is a fact. There's nothing you can do about it. And when someone mentions that, that doesn't mean that they're trying to take credit away from you, or they're not giving you enough credit for being in this position or ultimately winning a title. But you can't take it beyond that. You really can't. So you're going to hear a lot of that if this thing turns out the way I think it's going to turn out tonight. And just bear in mind, one, where it's coming from. Consider the source. And two, ask yourself, is the person who is saying this or writing this trying to provide context, or is he or she trying to diminish the accomplishment of the team? That's a very simple approach. Doug in Keswick, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Doug?
Good morning, Jeff, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, listen, do I think the we'll be celebrating tomorrow? I absolutely do. I'm so old. I'm really a hockey and a baseball fan, primarily, Jeff, and I know you're a man for all seasons. Now, I clearly remember Joe Carter's homer. Hell, I remember George Armstrong shooting from just inside the blue line into the empty net against Montreal Canadiens to give us our last Stanley Cup in 67. That's how old I am. Now, what I do not understand, Jeff, I'm not that big of a basketball knowledgeable person. I don't understand all the falderaw about Kevin Durant. First off, any basketball team wants to, at the best of times, at the most of times, have their best five players on the court. So when he went down with his injury, their number six man on the depth chart now moves up to be in the top five. Now, if he plays tonight, Kevin Durant, after not having played for a month and 2 days, May the 8th is when he got injured. If he plays tonight, here's a question for you, Jeff. Will he be better than what now becomes the number six man on the depth chart? And will he become better than that guy by enough to make up double-digit victories? Because as you pointed out, a five-point victory over Golden State is huge. And we've been beating them by double digits lately. Yeah. Can Kevin, does it matter whether Kevin Durant plays tonight or not?
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Look, I would argue that if you have 80% of Kevin Durant, you're better than with 100% of whoever he's replacing, unless that guy happens to be guy like Giannis or maybe even Kawhi Leonard. It's a false notion to simply say, you know, well, everybody deals with injuries during the postseason. It's up to somebody else to step up. That's true, but realistically, you're not replacing Kevin Durant. I mean, you're just not. You're not replacing his contribution. You're not replacing his threat. You're not replacing what he forces the other team to do. You're not replacing the added energy he forces the opposing team to expend in order to defend him. You can't simply replace Kevin Durant. But teams have won titles in the past with their best players being limited for one reason or another. The difference here, I think, is that there are teams the Golden State Warriors would be able to beat without Kevin Durant. The Raptors aren't one of them. There are other teams we've seen in the NBA playoffs. I would take Golden State over them even if they didn't have Kevin Durant. I'd take Golden State over Philadelphia even without Kevin Durant. Don't know about Milwaukee, but I'd take them over Philadelphia without Kevin Durant. I certainly take them over Portland without Kevin Durant. It didn't matter. They still won. And that, I think, is the thing to keep in mind here. There are teams out there that the Warriors could beat with Kevin Durant out of the lineup. The Raptors aren't one of them. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Sherm Hamilton joins us. Jim Barnett, he's a Warriors TV analyst with NBC Sports Bay Area. He'll be around at 11 o'clock. Mark Kestershire, he's got the play-by-play of the series. He's had the play-by-play of the series on ESPN along with John Barry and Hubie Brown. They have been remarkable throughout this series. And, whenever I hear people say, well, the U.S. national media isn't giving the Raptors their due, I kind of say, you know what? Listen in a bit to these guys because they've been giving the Raptors their due right from jump. I mean, they really have. So we'll talk to Mark Kestershire about that. But as I said, we'll go back to the phone lines, 416-870-0590. Text us at 590-590. It's a Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to a Tim, and we'll give you a Sid absolutely free. Tim and Sid podcast available at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
She just wants to be.
Ryan Mahoney, Associated Press. From where you guys were in the last round, you know, almost down 3-0, in which case maybe we're not here right now, to winning, you know, 7 of 8 against two of the best teams in basketball now is obviously a pretty incredible run. Is there anything you could have, when you got through that game three, where you could have said, okay, now we're about to take off? Was there any signs that your best basketball or such good basketball was coming?
I don't know specifically from that game. I felt that one of the times I felt really good in this playoff run was game one at Milwaukee, which we lost. We just hit that dramatic buzzer beater to advance. We got on the plane the next day and had to play less than 48 hours after that. And I thought we came out and played unbelievably tough. The ball didn't bounce our way that night. We didn't get any breaks, but I thought we outplayed them for the course of the game. And then when we went down 2 to them, our guys were like, we're okay, let's just get back home and get one and we'll get this thing turned around. So that's probably a moment of where I thought the team had something inside them to keep on going. But again, I think they've put down a foundation of defense. And I think if your team puts down a foundation of defense that they're going to try to bring each night, you put yourself in position to win most nights.
Toronto Raptors head coach Nick Nurse during yesterday's media availability, game 5. The best of 7 NBA Finals goes tonight. 9 o'clock is the tip-off on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1. Our radio coverage starts all day, or is available all day long on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, including a special 4-hour Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus from 12 to 4. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports will take over after that. We will have a Raptors pregame show with George Russick and Josh Goldberg at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And the same two gentlemen will be around following the game to take your calls. It's The Wrap, presented by Comda.com. And again, tip-off tonight will be at 9 p.m., just after 9 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1. Basketball Central on the TV side, 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1. Tim and Sid will be broadcasting live from Jurassic Park at 6 p.m. And a reminder, if you're going to the game tonight, you, the fans, will be singing O Canada. Keep that in mind. Get there early. Get in your seat. And you may want to, if you're worried about what the Americans think about you, you may want to stay in your seat at halftime, too, so that you don't, you know, they don't have all those empty seats at the start of the third quarter that seems to get everybody all exercised and that some people think actually contributed to Golden State Warriors running game 2, which was just silly. But anyhow, game 5 tonight. And of course, we all know what a Raptors victory will mean. And it is, I think, still, you know, it's not that difficult to wrap your head around it. It's not that difficult to wrap your head around the Warriors losing to the Raptors. Quite frankly, the Raptors have been the better team, as Eric Smith said, for probably 13 of the 16 quarters so far. I don't even think that's in doubt. They've been the better team. They've gotten better as the series has gone on. Quite frankly, I thought the score flattered Golden State in a couple of games. The Raptors could have won one game by, well, I think they could have won by 20 points, to be quite honest, in game 4. I mean, Golden State wasn't really in that game in the fourth quarter. So the idea that it's not surreal or hard to imagine the Raptors beating the Golden State Warriors anymore. I'm at the point now where I'd be disappointed if they don't wrap it up tonight. More than anything else, it's just the idea of wrapping your head around the notion that the city of Toronto is going to have a title or could have a title in one of the major North American sports. That's the thing that to me is harder to wrap my head around than the fact that the Raptors are beating the Golden State Warriors. Mike in Burlington, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Oh, Jeff, you're getting all those FC fans now ticked off at you.
No, I'm not. I'm not. They know where I'm coming from.
And the nice thing
about FC fans is that they understand the context. They understand the situation.
I know, and I agree with you. I mean, MLS is what it is. It's a distance from the top four major leagues in this continent. As for the game tonight, not a fan of either team, but yeah, I think the Raptors will prevail and hoist the Naismith Trophy.
It's Larry O'Brien Trophy.
Oh, sorry, I think I was the FIBA thing. That's my fault.
You could probably give them the Naismith Trophy too. I'm sure. They wouldn't mind.
Give them the world championship. I was going to tie that in with something else later this summer, is the FIBA World Championships in China for the Naismith Trophy. And under the radar, because of the Raptors' success in the playoffs, Nick Nurse has been named coach for Canada. A lot of people just seem to forget about that.
No, he has not confirmed that. He said it's
premature.
Oh, really?
Okay. All right. Now, the it factor. Remember Paul Pierce's comments 3-4-plus years ago in the playoffs?
Yep.
I would say this Raptor team has the it factor. Just some of the moves Ajiri has made to address areas. The one guy I never liked on the Raptors, and Valanciunas, I just thought he was a softy. And when they made that trade, bringing in guys like Gasol, obviously last year, the 10 on the Richter scale with Kawhi Leonard, that's the type of it factor. And that's the first thing that went through my mind when you brought up, can the Raptors do it, was Paul Pierce's damning comments. Yeah, they were true a few years ago, but they're not true based on this current roster.
Well, Mike, and thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, the reason they have the it factor is they've got Kawhi Leonard. That's the biggest reason, the biggest indicator of the it factor. They haven't had a guy, and at the time the deal was made, everybody said, right? Everybody said that Kawhi Leonard was going to be the best individual player the Raptors have had. Vince was a great player. Don't get me wrong. He was a showman. He was wonderful. But in terms of two-way player, everybody said the Raptors have never had a guy like Kawhi Leonard. Tracy McGrady was a decent two-way player. He's not even in the same stratosphere as Kawhi Leonard. So Kawhi Leonard is the it factor. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We are going to keep the phone lines open. Sherm Hamilton will join us at 10 o'clock. Corey Hirsch will talk a little Stanley Cup. The Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues are heading to a Game 7. The first Game 7 that Boston has hosted in 95-year history of the team, which I find really odd, but what the hell, it's on the NHL website, so it must be true. Jim Barnett, Warriors TV analyst, will join us. Mark Kestisher, who has been handling play-by-play duties along with John Barry and Hubie Brown on ESPN, he'll join us as well. So we've got a few folks holding on the phone lines. I promise you, we will get to you. Keep texting us. 590, 590 is the text line. We'll read out some texts a little later when we come back. Sherman Hamilton, Basketball Central analyst, joins us. It's a Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Did Bob McCown just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. When he's not writing, he's on the radio. When he's not on the radio, he's writing. When he's not writing or on the radio, well, we've only left him the two options, so he's not allowed to do anything else. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hats off to Kawhi Leonard. You know, a lot of people say he's number three. He just moved up to the second best player in the league, in my opinion, because this kid is playing, and I like where he came from. You know, he wasn't a high draft pick. This right here is the true definition of hard work. I love this kid. I love his demeanor. He never cries. He never complains. He plays the same way all the time. So right now, I'm saying he's the second best player, closing in on the best player in the game.
Shaquille O'Neal. So I guess he's all in on Kawhi Leonard, closing in on the second best player in the game. Here's the thing. If you look at Kawhi Leonard's career postseason performance, and Kawhi, I think, turns 28. He turns 28 in like 10 days or 11 days. So Kawhi Leonard is not an old man by any stretch of the imagination. Kawhi Leonard's positioned himself to go down in history as one of the greatest postseason performers in NBA history. I mean, you just look at the numbers. Just look at his career numbers in terms of number of 30-point games, things of that nature. He is positioned to go down. And again, I'm not saying that necessarily just as a result of this series. But if Kawhi Leonard plays for another 5 or 6 years, there's a real chance. There's a real chance he goes down as one of the great postseason performers in NBA history. The numbers are there. You know, the championships could be there as well. And you know, as to Shaq's assertion that he's closing in and being the second best player in the NBA, I don't think, I mean, right now, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I'll tell you, we've spent all offseason talking about Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Who the hell cares where Kyrie Irving goes? I'm more interested in knowing where Kawhi Leonard goes. Like, I know that we in this city have basically, I think, arrived at the conclusion that Kawhi Leonard is either going to stay here or go to the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm not sure about that. You know, the bottom line is Toronto can still offer him more money than anybody else. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily where this decision sits right now. And I'll tell you, if I'm a team looking to spend on a free agent or looking to add that player who can bring other players around me, I'd be all over Kawhi Leonard. You can have Kyrie Irving. You can have Kyrie Irving. You know, you can have Anthony Davis as far as that goes. But, man, I would take Kawhi Leonard right now. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Keep the phone calls coming. We'll go to the phone lines right now. Let's bring in Sherman Hamilton, Basketball Central analyst on Sportsnet. Sherm, thanks so much for joining us this morning. So, you know, I think most people, Sherm, are approaching tonight's Game 5 under the assumption that Kevin Durant is going to play for Golden State. You know, however many minutes that is, or, you know, however sharp he's going to be. I think most people assume that he will be playing. I was a little surprised he wasn't ready for Game 4. I'll ask you the same question I asked Eric Smith, because to me it's the only question out there right now. If Kevin Durant plays, what do you expect to see from Kevin Durant? And what, if anything, do the Raptors have to do to counteract that defensively?
Well, first of all, Jeff, glad to be back on your show. I still need to see him on the floor. Until I see it, I'm not really believing it. And if he is on the floor, obviously he's an all-world talent, but he's missed a little over a month of basketball. So, and at the highest level. So I think there will be rust on his game. He's still a guy who can provide a lot of impact, even if he's at 70, 80%. So if you're the Raptors, you have to pay close attention to him. And I think you have to test him right away to see exactly where he's at regarding his injury and coming back to the floor. This reeks of Golden State saying, hey, we just got to do everything now. A little bit of desperation in their approach right now, being down 3-1. But again, when you put Kevin Durant in the mix in any situation, you've got to pay attention to him. So again, I feel like I need to see him on the floor before I actually believe that he's going to play. But if he does play, that just creates another player that the Raptors are really going to have to focus on, along with the other big stars that they have on Golden State.
Sherm, Friday's win and the manner in which the Raptors went about doing that, you know, literally, I mean, sucking the life out of the building. You know, we all saw the shot. Well, you were there. I mean, we saw fans leaving early. As I said, I thought the score actually kind of flattered Golden State. That, to me, felt like a 23-point win more than a 14 or 15-point win. But the thing that has really kind of surprised me about the Raptors in this series is that, Sherm, they're getting better as the series goes on. You know, I would argue that you could look back at, with the exception of the second game of this series, you know, you can go back seven games to that, the run they started against Philadelphia, or I'm sorry, the run they started against Milwaukee, and go, they got better with each successive game. And not even just a little bit better, they got measurably better.
I would agree with that, Jeff. I think if you look at the playoffs, the Raptors are the only team that I think has been continually figuring things out about themselves and building and getting better throughout their whole playoff run. And when you talk about what they've done since the Milwaukee series, look, they had those two games in Milwaukee where the game one, they literally had that game until the fourth quarter. So we could have been talking about a team that went on a bigger run than that if they didn't give up that first game in that Milwaukee series. And I think what we've seen is their defense has gotten better. We've seen the guys around Kawhi start to step up and play better basketball. And to me, they're still figuring out how good they can be. And it's a weird time of the year to actually say that, because at this point, teams know who they are and they know what they can do. Well, this team has continued to get better, and this is the issue for Golden State, because in building and in this series, what we're seeing is the Raptors are not only getting better offensively, defensively they're getting better as well. They're consistent. They have what I call multiple effort plays defensively per possession. So it's not just about chasing Steph off the screen. It's about getting to him in pick and roll. It's about rebounding. It's about being physical with other people on the floor. It's about recovering defensively to other players after they've gotten the ball out of Steph's hands. The multiple plays per possession defensively has gotten even tougher. And I think for Golden State, they're really struggling trying to crack the code of the defense of the Raptors. And the Raptors have cracked the code of Golden State and the offense that they want to run.
You know, the other thing I think that has really been noticeable in this game, I'm sorry, in this series, has been just how dominant the Raptors have been at the free throw line. And you know, I talked to Eric a little bit about this. NBA.com, Justin Kubatko, has, you know, broken down free throw percentage by teams through the first four games of an NBA Finals. Toronto's at 90.3%. Golden State was at 85.5% in 2018. Seattle, 85.2% in 96. Chicago, 84.4% in 91. Indiana in 2000 was at 84.2%. And Sherm, you know as well as anybody that one of the ways you stay in a game when the other team is going on a roll is you make your free throws, because those are like free points, man. And if you're behind, they're free points with the clock not running. It's like a gift almost. And the Raptors have, you know, the Raptors have been able to take advantage of those gifts.
Well, you're right, and they've been consistently aggressive throughout this series. They have the size advantage, so they're trying to take as much opportunities as they can, attacking, getting physical, and just trying to overpower Golden State, and Golden State has been forced to foul. Now, the biggest thing, along with the things that you're saying that free throws do, obviously stops the clock, it allows you to, you know, kind of get your bearings, but the best thing it does is it doesn't allow Golden State to run transition basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them have to take the ball out of the basket, and then they have to play five on five instead of getting it off the rebound and running it down your throat every chance they get. So the free throw and the ability to get to the free throw line and really slow the pace of the game down has been huge for the Raptors. Golden State hasn't really had a great transition game against the Raptors. So I just think that their ability to stay focused on the task at hand, which is to play downhill, to not settle for jump shots, to be the aggressor, to force the officials to blow the whistle, has been a huge part of this series. And Golden State really hasn't found that flow, because the Raptors have been able to really control the tempo for the most part.
You know, it's, I mean, we spent so much time talking about how good Kawhi Leonard has been, and he has been great. But when you look at his, when you look at what he's done this postseason and compare to, you know, compare it to the others, I mean, he, you know, if he hits his average tonight, he, you know, will knock Shaquille O'Neal out of the number five spot for most points in a postseason. Well, it's, you know, Jordan, James, Olajuwon, and Iverson in front of him. That's pretty good company. You know, his points per game is right up there with, you know, Michael Jordan on two of his four finals Michael Jordan had the same level of points per game production as Kawhi Leonard did. It's just a little bit behind LeBron. Of course, Mike was 35-5 in 1993, which was just sick. But he's shooting 60%. Like this, you know, we really are seeing one of the dominant postseasons in NBA history by a player. And as I said, Sherm, he ain't an old man. Like, yeah, he was hurt last year, but he's going to turn 28 in a couple of days. He could go down in history as one of the best postseason performers. You know, knock on wood, if he stays healthy and if he ends up in the right team, he could go down in history as one of the best postseason performers in the NBA's ever seen.
Well, historically, this playoff run by Kawhi is going to go down in history as one of the best playoff performances in NBA history. And when you think about it, what to me intrigues me about Kawhi is that what he's doing seems to be something that he could do on a regular basis as long as he's healthy.
Yeah.
And that's where the greatness comes. The great ones do it all the time, every year. They go deep into the playoffs, and they are the guy. Everybody knows they're the guy, and they continue to produce. Well, Kawhi came into this playoff run knowing that he was the guy. Everybody focused on him, and he was still able to do what he's done. So that's what, to me, separates the good ones from the great. When you take that other step that very few players can take in this league, now you've separated yourself. Can you stay on that level? Can you consistently be that guy? Kawhi has shown without a shadow of a doubt he is one of the elite players in the world. So, yes, if he's healthy, Jeff, I agree. He has the chance and the potential to go down as one of the best playoff performers in the game. Now, a lot goes into that. You got to make it to the playoffs. You got to go deep into the playoffs. You got to contend for championships. But Kawhi has shown that he is that type of player. And what we're seeing has been an unbelievable performance to date from a guy who only played 9 games last season. And a lot was expected of him coming to Toronto, and he's answered the call in leaps and bounds.
Has he had a greater effect on the Toronto Raptors? I got to be careful how I ask this, but from what you've seen around the team, and I don't want to take anything away from anybody else, but has he had a greater impact on how this team goes about its business than any other player in Raptors history? And I'm talking about not just day-to-day, Sherm, but sort of that stony-faced, we beat Oakland in game 4, no big deal. Now we got to go back and win another game. Like it seems as if the Raptors follow the pace that the Kawhi sets.
Absolutely. And you think about it, both games at Oracle that the Raptors won, they walked off the court, as you said, no big deal. We just did what we're supposed to do. We're not going to celebrate. We're not going to jump around. We're not going to high-five it. We're going to quietly walk off the court because we're not done what we have to do. That, to me, is definitely a Kawhi Leonard trait. If you've watched him all season long, as we have, Jeff, you know that he's not about getting excited about things. Even look at the big shot he hit against Philadelphia in Game 7 that went in. He celebrated for all of about 7.2 seconds, and then he was back to Kawhi Leonard, back to business. All right, let's move on. Let's get on to the next situation. So to me, Kawhi is a guy who, because of his dominance on the floor, his personality and his mentality permeates the team. And everybody knows when you see good leadership, whatever perspective it's coming from, you're willing to follow suit. And the Raptors understand this is championship pedigree. This is a level that a lot of the guys on the team have never been to before. So they're going to follow the guy who's been there and who's been a finals MVP, is able to get it done. So Kawhi, to me, has had significant impact in the demeanor, in the mindset, in the approach, and also in the reaction to what they've accomplished. Business isn't done until you hoist the Larry O'Brien. And to me, that's the mentality that this team has taken from Kawhi.
Sherm, was great of you to join us, man. Look forward to your work tonight. You'll be part of our pregame coverage on Sportsnet and post-game coverage as well. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, Jeff, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Sherman Hamilton, Basketball Central analyst on Sportsnet. And again, Sherm, Brad Fay, Alvin Williams, 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1, Basketball Central. They'll be live from Scotiabank Arena. Tonight is the night, folks. Game 5 of the NBA Finals. The Raptors with the chance to win their first ever NBA title. This city's first major North American championship since 1993. And not just any championship, winning a title in a global game. You know how much I love baseball. Baseball does not have the international reach of basketball, nor does hockey. You know, basketball and soccer are the two sports that have that big international reach. There is a lot of mileage for the city of Toronto to be gained from winning an NBA Finals. It is a big, big deal around the world. And one win away, the Raptors are, from winning that title and sending the city into I don't know what. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590-5590. Let's go back to the phone lines. You've been patient. We'll continue to go to the phone lines all day long. And rest assured that we will be back as well tomorrow. This is a great Toronto sports moment. It's been a great Toronto sports moment. And it's a real privilege to be able to share it with listeners and fans. Kim in Bradford, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Kim?
I'm happy. And regarding tonight's game, whether Kevin shows up, which I highly doubt, or he doesn't show up, Raptors are right now, as Kyle said the other day, this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And they're following the business to a T.
You know, it's that. Thanks for the call. That is, you know, they have taken a we haven't seen, you know, what we haven't seen from the Raptors. And I thought you'd see a little glimpse of it. Like, I'm not surprised that the Raptors are, I'm not surprised they are where they are in the series. I'm not surprised they've been playing the way they've been playing. I thought we'd see just a little bit of the happy to be there moment, right? I'm not saying that I thought these guys would be so excited to be in the final that they would, you know, it would get in the way of game preparation and yada. I didn't think I'd see it, but I thought we'd see glimpses of the moment maybe just kind of catching up a little bit. Not, again, not to the point where it would cause them to lose a game or anything critical would happen, but I kind of looked for those signs of, yeah, boy, this is cool. It's the NBA Finals. And all I'm getting is, hey, this is the, what, 94th game of the season, however many games they've played. I can't do the math right now. Just another game. Hey, guess what? We got another game on Monday night. That gives us a couple of nights off, day of practice. The business, like, you can tell when a team is BSing you. You can tell when a player is BSing you. Everybody says we're taking it one day at a time, yada, yada. You can look at a player and go, nah, that's BS. You ain't taking it one day at a time. You're filling your drawers right now. You see it. People will tell you they're taking it one day at a time. They haven't been taking it one day at a time for 2 or 3 weeks. These guys have. I honestly think these guys don't care that they're up 3-1 on the Golden State. Well, I don't think it matters to them. They could be down 3-1, could be tied 2-2. This may be the only team that would have had to have been, if that would have had to have been informed that they'd swept the series. If they won game two and then went on to Oakland to win those two games, somebody would probably have to tell them at some point in the fourth quarter, guys, guess what? You know, you're going to sweep the series. I mean, I truly believe that this team is just focused on the task in front of them. This team, in a lot of ways, is a cliche. It is a walking, breathing, dribbling, shooting, rebounding cliche. This is how you're supposed to be when you take it day to day. This is it. This is what it looks like when you take it day to day. Trip down the floor, trip down the floor. This is what it looks like. Dex in Hamilton, what's up, Dex?
Hey, Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing real well.
Excellent. Thank you for taking my call. You know, everything points to the Raptors clinching tonight. They've been the better team. Everything you said is true so far in the show. They've been the better team. They have the best player in the series by far. And like you just said, too, another really good point. Right now, they're running on laser focus. They are just, you know, they're as focused as the Raptors team has ever been. but I'm going to poo-poo on the parade for just a couple of games. Maybe I'm giving Golden State too much credit, but I just think, you know what, until the beast is dead, until the defending champs are knocked off, they still have some punches to give. I think Durant will make a difference tonight. If not lighting up the scoreboard, at least just he's a presence that has to be dealt with. Then I see them going back to Golden State, tying the series up, but I think the Raptors will clinch it next Sunday at home in Game 7. So there you have it.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. I don't think there's any way in hell this series goes 7. If they don't win tonight, they'll wrap it up in Golden State. Golden State will be better with Kevin Durant. Golden State will be better with Kevin Durant at 50%, 60%, 70%, 80%. But at this stage, I'm not certain Kevin Durant makes a difference. Get Kevin Durant back, you're still going to need a great game from Klay Thompson or Steph Curry. I don't think Kevin Durant coming back will necessarily be the difference at this point in the series. And here's the other thing, too. I mean, with all due respect to Kevin Durant, if you're healthy enough to play tonight, you should have been healthy enough to play in Game 4. Game 4, to me, is the biggest game of this series. You're down 2-1, right? You've seen the other team win in your home court. Now, I understand in this day and age of sports science, you know, that there are various strength measurements that are taken of athletes. And if you don't reach a certain threshold, and the Blue Jays did this with Russ Martin, and Russ Martin told me, Russ Martin's days off weren't always a result of Russ Martin deciding he needs a day off. They give him a strength test. You don't reach a certain threshold, you're red flagged, boom, you got to sit down. So that happens these days. And I understand that now more than ever, a day might make a difference to an athlete's recovery. But again, with all due respect to Kevin Durant, you're ready tonight. You should have been ready in Game 4. You really should have been. You know, this is an injury that has been long running. It's not something you hurt in Game 1. Now we got to see if you're ready in Game 2. Now we got to see if you're ready in Game 3. Now you're ready in Game 4. I mean, they've had a while to get this figured out. So I'm just saying that. If Kevin Durant is really healthy tonight, he should have been really healthy for Game 4. Nolan of Bowmanville, what's up?
Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking my call. I just want to comment on something you said earlier about some people would put an asterisk on this championship when the Raptors do wrap it up. I think that's absolutely just ignorant. I think everyone needs to remember here that we're talking about arguably one of the best assembled NBA teams of all time in the Warriors. And yes, with Durant on the court, it changes the landscape of this, no doubt, whether he's 100% or 70%. But let's not forget, we still got Steph Curry, we got Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. We're still talking about a powerhouse here. And this is why they were the overwhelming favorites in Vegas to win this thing. And like you said, this has been a beatdown. So when the Raptors do win this, and they will, I think and I hope that they will get the respect and the recognition that they've earned and they deserve.
Yeah, and again, I think in most thanks for the call. I mean, in most places, and I mean, I've consumed a lot of the media south of the border during this series. By and large, they have been getting credit. Unfortunately, it's some of the louder voices, which, as quite often happens in the U.S., tend to be some of the stupider voices that are creating this idea that every American writer is running around, you know, with an asterisk in their pocket. But again, it's part of the conversation and the commentary around this series has to focus on the fact Kevin Durant isn't there. And it just does. And again, when someone says that, it doesn't mean that they're taking anything away from the Raptors. They're just stating a fact. Here's one of the things. If you are going to be in a city that is a championship team, then you better be prepared to have big boy discussions about it, right? You better be prepared to defend it. Yeah, that's part of the package, part of the deal with being a champion. I mean, Golden State heard the same thing. I will remind people, when they beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers didn't have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. Again, that's not the same as not having Kevin Durant. In some cases, it might be worse because you're missing two guys. You're missing almost half your starters. I mean, think about that. So again, I don't get wrapped up in it because it's hot takey, and it's not particularly intelligent hot takiness. It's usually said to get a reaction. It's lazy. It overlooks, you know, the fact that every finals, every series is its own separate story. You know, we just don't know everything. We don't know what Kawhi Leonard's playing with or Kyle Lowry's playing with. You know, Kyle Lowry's going to have thumb surgery. I mean, we just don't know the physical shape of everybody. We really don't. So anyhow, that's right. And as I said, the state of basketball commentary is so good. I mean, it is, and I've made this point, and I will continue to make this point, in terms of social media, in terms of the blogosphere, in terms of national writers, in terms of national coverage. This is really a golden era for basketball coverage in North America. It is far and away of any of the major sports in North America, has the most edgy, sophisticated coverage. More than baseball, more than hockey. It just does. There's a young, edgy, educated fan base, and a lot of edgy, educated people who create much of the dialogue surrounding the NBA right now. And most of them are giving your Raptors credit. There is a tendency to sometimes listen to the loudest voices and assume that they are speaking for the masses. And, you know, if recent history, political and social history has taught us anything, it's that that's not necessarily the case. Victor in Milton. What's up, Victor?
Hey, Jeff. Not much. Just raining as usual this summer. Listen, you know what? I agree with everything you said about the asterisk argument from those pant loads in the States. You know, and empty barrels do make the most noise. You know, but there's an angle that isn't being talked about, and it's the Kevin Durant angle. And from the standpoint of, okay, they were up 3-1 when he was with Oklahoma, and they lost to Oklahoma. Now, if I'm a true competitor, I give him all the credit in the world of being the best scorer ever, a great basketball player. But as a competitor, do you think Michael Jordan, if he got his ass kicked after being up 3-1, is going to say, you know what, I'm going to leave my team and go play with a guy that just kicked my ass? And that stuck in my craw for the last 3 years. And then he wins MVP, and he holds that up with pride. The ring on his finger, he holds up with pride. I am sorry. It's like with Barcelona with the Dream Team. It was a novelty. It was nice, but I wasn't watching it because I was watching it to see. And there was no compelling reason to watch other than, are they going to blow somebody up by 100 points?
Yeah, you know, it's Victor, thanks for the call. We got to move on. It's interesting you said that because it's – you know, look, Kevin Durant wasn't the first person to do that, right? I mean, Chris Bosh essentially decided that he needed to, you know, link forces with other dominant players in order to win a title. And people have made that point. Can you imagine Larry and Magic getting together and saying, hey, man, let's both go to New York and win a title with the Knicks? But the thing is, you know, it's different times and athletes are wired differently. And I don't begrudge any athlete for doing what Kevin Durant did. I don't begrudge any athlete for looking around, taking advantage of the power that he has to put himself in a better situation, whether that is a better economic situation or a better situation in terms of winning. I have no problem with professional athletes doing that. I really don't. It's a business. Nobody in ownership or management tends to give these guys a lifeline when their career is over or when they go down with an injury. So you take advantage of whatever opportunity you get. If you can go someplace and win a title, by all means, go ahead and do it. I don't get wrapped up in that. And I'm also a little leery about making sort of cross-generational references because it's a different time. You know, you're not going to find a Larry Bird anymore. You're just not. You're not going to find a Magic Johnson anymore. Kids are different. Victor, we're not going to find another Victor anymore. Kids are different. Mercifully, we're not going to find another me anymore. Kids are different. That's just the way it is. People are different. They're wired differently. They think differently. They anticipate differently. And what I mean by that is they anticipate what the future is going to hold for them differently. They have a different mindset than we do. Things happen faster for them. That's just a fact. So I have no problem with a guy leaving a team to go and hook up with another team and win the title the way Kevin Durant did. I'd do the same damn thing in his situation. And, you know, it's a problem in some ways for the NBA because you are getting at a point now, you're getting to the point now, I should say, where, you know, guys are even saying, hell, I'll take less money to go and play with this guy. Like, how do you... You can't fight that if you're a league. If I'm a player and I'm willing to take less money to go play with this guy, you can't fight that. So I think we need to, when it comes to talking about, you know, putting asterisks beside a guy's career or putting asterisks beside a team, you have to look at each situation individually and understand that what was a factor in 1979 or 1980 or 85 is not a factor now. It's just not. What was a factor in last year's playoffs is not a factor now. I mean, each thing is its different story. The players are getting older, right? Some players are getting older. There's new players coming to the game. It's not the same. More than ever, it's getting difficult to compare this season to four seasons ago or three seasons ago because stuff is just happening so, so fast. The Boston Bruins have forced a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. A relatively easy 5-1 win over the St. Louis Blues. Bruins are 95 years old. They've been to 27 Game 7s. It's the first one they're going to host. It's bizarre. Corey Hirsch is our Canucks and NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. He'll join us. And then we'll return our focus to basketball. Jim Barnett, Warriors TV analyst, will be along at 11 o'clock. Mark Kestisher as well. He's got the call on ESPN along with Hubie Brown and John Barry. Don't go anywhere. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Beat the St. Louis Blues 5-1 last night. The Stanley Cup Final is tied at 3 games apiece. Game 7 is set for Wednesday on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop will be just after 8 p.m. The Bruins, apparently spurred on by a pregame speech from Brad Marchand, came out with a great deal of intensity. And as a result, the series goes back to Boston. The Bruins have played the most Game 7s in NHL history. 28. This will be the first time they will have hosted a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final, which is absolutely remarkable, considering all the great. Well, in some ways, maybe it isn't, considering how good the Bruins have been generally when they've won. It was a terrific game for Marchand, Chara, Krejci, Bergeron. I mean, the Bruins veterans, I thought, really, really stepped to the forefront here. And again, I thought the St. Louis Blues were going to walk away with this game. I thought it would be the Blues winning, possibly winning 5-1. But the Bruins have sent the series. Well, they've sent the series back to Boston. Corey Hirsch is our Canucks and NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Look, I mean, this is, you know, very much in keeping, I think, with, you know, with sort of what we expect or what we think of the Bruins, Corey, the fact that they would win that game and bring it back home to a seventh game. You know, who has momentum when a team goes in, when a team goes into a seventh game? Is it always the team necessarily that forced the extra game?
I've played in a few game sevens, and not in the NHL, but in the minors and junior. Once you get to game seven, the pressure feels like it's off of both teams. So you feel like, well, there's only one more game. You know, it's kind of like nothing to lose now. Whereas when you watch the game last night and even before the game, I was like, man, it's nice that all these people show up and that there's 100,000 people outside and they're cheering and everything. But the pressure on the Blues to close that out last night was, I can't even imagine what it felt like to be a Blues player in that locker room. Because, you know, fans are great. Don't get me wrong, but you know, the papers are printing stuff. Everybody expected the Blues to close that out last night. And I can't even imagine the immense pressure those players had felt because, you know, they're talking like 49 years. Mm-hmm. Right? Everyone's saying 49 years. Like, can you imagine what it was like to be in that locker room and feeling like the weight of the whole city was on your back?
Well, and you know, and I mean, the way the Bruins won that game with what, you know, 4 third period goals. I mean, that was, you know, I guess if you want momentum, not only going back to your own building for game seven, but going back with sort of the wind in your sails from 4 third period goals would kind of do it for you. What happened during that whirlwind? You know, what happened to the Blues? I mean, I know, look, again, Boston's penalty kill was great. Boston's penalty kill has been great all series, but it's like the Blues just had no answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tuukka was unbelievable, but Ryan O'Reilly said it best. He said in the first period, they had a ton of momentum going in the first 10 minutes, and then they got down 5-on-3, and he said the whole game changed. And he's right. It kind of took the wind out of St. Louis' sails, I thought. But there was times in the second period where, you know, St. Louis dominated, and Boston was able to hang on. They were able to hold the fort. Even though they had the long change and they looked exhausted. At the end of the second period, I was like, Boston looks like they are exhausted. Mm-hmm. And then in the third period, you know, I attribute that probably to leadership in the locker room, guys that have been there, done it before. I would look at guys like Chara and Marchand and Bergeron. They knew in the third period, if they didn't come out and get that next goal, they knew they were in trouble. And I think when you have that experience, you know the key moments in a hockey game. And I'm guessing that's probably what happened in their locker room between the second and third, that they were all ready to play in the third period.
Well, yeah, and Corey, when you come out and you know, you take a 1-0 lead, what, 9 minutes into the game, you're working hard and you know, you've got that good feeling, but that's just it. You get one goal, then you go through the second period and you're gassed. You still only got one goal. Like, that is, you know, I think that gets to your point. That I've got to think one of the most frustrating things for a team facing elimination is to have that good start or that decent start, and then at the end of the second period, look up and go, wow, I mean, you know, our effort's not being reflected on the scoreboard.
No question, but, you know, you're always looking for that lead and then just trying to kill the clock in the third. They're up 1-0. And I, you know what, it's been an interesting series, and I'll ask you this too as well. You know, the officiating was complained about by Cassidy after mm-hmm. game five. So then all of a sudden the officiating, I thought last night was fair for both sides. It was good. But you know, it shouldn't change when coaches go public and complain, right? It's
well, like, do you think it does? Honestly?
I mean, I do.
You think it does? Yeah. Like, I can't imagine that the NHL office and the officials say, you know what, man, you know, Craig Berube was in our grill. We've got to. I don't know if that happens. Human nature would suggest it might, but I don't know if it necessarily happens. But you're right. I mean, it has happened in this series. Complain about the officiating, you get the breaks the next game. It's, you know, however, it, whatever the reason, it does seem to be the case. I thought Carson Kuhlman's goal, to make it 3-0 was the goal that really kind of put that thing to bed. And again, this is vintage Bruins, isn't it? You know, big game and a guy scores his first goal and the guy gets in the lineup and scores his first goal and you're going, why doesn't that happen to any other team? Happens to the Bruins, right?
You have that tradition on your side, and what a shot that was too. Right in the corner of the bar, it was unbelievable. And then the bouncing goal that they got, Bruins had a little bit of luck on their side. Game seven, I think is going to be. I think St. Louis will go back to that, trying to run them out of the building. I think they'll really come out and probably be extremely physical. And again, to me, it's going to be up to the officiating, whether or not what they're going to let go, what they're going to call. I would expect in game seven, it's been throughout the whole playoffs. So we've seen it in past games is that, you know, they've tend to put their whistles in their pockets. So let's see what happens in game seven, because we might have both teams just with no players left, no defensemen left after running each other through the boards.
Yeah. And I mean, wouldn't that, you know, I'm sure Game 7, a series where officiating has been under the spotlight. I'm sure the NHL's worst fear is having this game decided by a call one way or another.
No question. Well, and I was going to say, you know what, it's not so much that the league would come and talk to them. It's that you can't tell me that the officials, you know, don't hear that stuff or they don't have social media. It's everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, not that they're talking about, but I mean, you have to, if you're a ref, you have to know that they're talking about the officiating throughout the playoffs, right? So those guys want, they're good guys. They want to do a good job. I know a lot of them personally. They're trying to do the best they can. And they've been so scrutinized. So I hope game seven is just what it is. Let the players decide it on the ice.
Yeah. And that, you know, my point throughout this all along, Corey, has been, I understand the need for video replay. I understand the need for certainty. Yeah. But I really think at the end of the year, there has to be a sit down with general managers and officials. Because I honestly do believe, and I mean, I watch a lot of sports, I believe NHL officials are by and large the best working in any professional sport. But they are under so much pressure right now.
Oh, my God.
They're under so much pressure right now that these guys literally do not know whether they're coming or going. And that's not fair, because it doesn't matter how much video review you're going to have. The game is still going to be in the hands of the linesmen and the referees. And I think the NHL needs to address this. I really do.
I agree 100%. And I think that they all know that, too. You know all the guys in the head offices. They're good people. They're trying to do the best for the game as well. But you're right. This summer, something has to be done and looked at. Like, help these guys out.
Yes.
Right? I feel like the officials have been left on an island during these playoffs. I don't see the league really backing them up or... you know, and if I was a ref, I would right now, I would feel like, you know, that nobody's got my back. And that's a tough position to be in. So I think you're right. I think this summer is a big time for the NHL to, because you and I, you know what, we shouldn't even be talking about it right now. We should be talking about game seven, but we're talking about the officials, right? So it's like, it shouldn't be that way.
Well, and the worst thing is we're talking about the officials because we're scared of what might happen. That's even worse. Yeah. I mean, if you're having a debate about a botched call last night, okay, that's one thing. But we're sitting here sort of, you know what? We're sitting here saying, thank God that there was no real botched call in that game. Now we just hope we get through game seven without, you know, without somebody directing a hand pass or somebody being thrown out of the game for a, you know, for a phantom play. Corey, thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, anytime, Jeff.
Be well. It's Corey Hirsch, our Canucks NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1. Jim Barnett is the Warriors TV analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area. We've talked a lot about Game 5 from the Raptors' point of view. Let's find out how the Golden State Warriors are approaching this. Jim Barnett is next, and Mark Kestisher. He has had the call of the NBA Finals with Hubie Brown and John Barry on ESPN. It's the Jeff Blair Show. Lots of hoops talk ahead on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. The sports business has had him in a submission hold for over 30 years, but he refuses to tap out. So you think your comments can make a dent? Bring it. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Mark Schwartz, ESPN. Hi, Clay. You guys were down in a similar situation in the conference final against Oklahoma City a few years back. How much did that experience help you in this, and what is the difference between this situation and that one?
I mean, what I remember from that is just the same I'm feeling now. It's just basketball, and you know, I just got to go get one to start. And I'm using the motivation of bringing one back to Oakland to help. You know, we feel like the city of Oakland deserves one more game at least. So if we want that to happen, we got to go out and take care of business tomorrow. And I was also on the other side, 3-1, losing a lead. So I try to reference that standpoint, how I was feeling back then. You know, maybe I don't know if the Raptors are feeling this, but you feel very confident. You know, all you got to do is win one. So you see both sides, and how is it similar? I mean, both teams, that OKC team and this Raptor team, are very similar as far as their length, athleticism, star power. And, yeah, you just got to take it one game at a time.
It's Klay Thompson of the Golden State Warriors speaking during yesterday's media availability, asked about being in a similar situation against Oklahoma City. And you realize that. You go back and look at the Raptors' run and how they got to the point where they're at right now, and you realize they really have been through just about every possible scenario during this remarkable run, as we talked about earlier in the show, a run that not only, I mean, they're not only a dynasty, they are a dynasty that has redefined the way the game is played. And again, there's a danger, because I truly believe, and I subscribe to the theory, that when you are trying to take the belt away from the champion, and I know this is a cliche, but I truly believe it in team sports, you don't win in a TKO, right? You have to knock them out. And the Raptors have not done that yet. Now, the question is, if Kevin Durant does come back, does that have the type of impact on this series that a lot of people think it will? And what I mean by that is, we don't know if Kevin Durant is 100%. We don't know if it's 80%. He's 80%. We don't know if he's 60%. As I said earlier in the show, to me, if you're ready to go, you're ready to go in Game 4. Getting you ready to go in Game 5, I understand sports science is what it is. I understand that injuries change from day to day, but I would be surprised if Kevin Durant is measurably healthier now than he was going into Game 4, but we shall see. Jim Barnett is a Warriors TV analyst on NBC Sports Bay Area. He certainly knows more about this team than any of us do, and Jim Barnett joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jim, thanks for joining us. I do want to ask you, again, you know, you've seen this team a lot. What's your sense on KD's status, and do you think he plays tonight?
Well, he's listed as questionable, and it's been that way for so long. It's been very vague. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his injury that occurred about 5 weeks ago was a lot more serious than everyone let on. They called it a mild strain. They never gave it a number, like a grade 3 sprain or a grade 2, grade 1, any of that stuff. And so obviously it was a little more serious. And it's taken a very, very long time for him to rehabilitate here. So, you know, he's been doing some workouts, but scrimmaging, Steve Kerr made it very clear that if he could not scrimmage at least the day before a game and have a full court scrimmage, that he wasn't ready to play. And it's all up to the medical staff. So, you know, I've got to be very careful in what I don't know. It's all speculation.
That's fair.
I'm not a doctor. I'm it's interesting with you. I thought he was going to come back for game four.
Right.
And maybe 3 days makes a difference. You know, it seems difficult to me. I know this, you can play with pain, but you can't play with injury. And there is a difference, a distinct difference, because I played in this league and you can push it and everything. But if you have an injury, you just can't play. You can play through the pain and those things, but if it's not going to make it worse. Mm. And that's what Clay Thompson did in game four. Of course, he wanted to play in game three, and they had to shut him down and keep him up, and it was hard to do that. So I will say this, though. If it would not surprise me if Durant plays tonight, and if he does play, if I am the Toronto Raptors, I want to bring that same game that that the Raptors brought in the second half of game four when they were just their offense was just incredible. The Warriors had no defensive answers to that because, I'm saying this as a caution, the Warriors are very resilient, as you heard you were talking to listening to Clay Thompson back in 2015 when they were down 3-1 to Oklahoma City. They've got experience now. They've got three championships, two in a row. They have a strong will. And now, if Durant does play, even if he's not that effective, you can't double-team Stephen Curry. You can't double-team Klay Thompson. They're going to be roaming free. And so here's my warning for Toronto. If Durant plays tonight, you better win game five, because I believe this wholly. If the Warriors come back and win tonight in Toronto, game five, they will go home and win game six at home, and they will come back for a game seven, and I would give the odds that they would win that too. So if Durant plays tonight and the Raptors lose, I think the Warriors will go on and win three straight. It would not surprise me.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people who followed this team would probably feel the same way. You know, as I said, and I mean, this is no great insight, and I'm sure it's shared in the Raptors locker room as well. You don't win a title in a TKO. You win the title by you got to put the champ down. And if the champ is gasping for air, that's probably the right time to do it. You know, Jim, one of the things that, you know, and I'm somebody who really likes watching the Golden State Warriors play. I mean, I've been lucky enough that I started watching basketball when Magic and Bird were going at it, and I was able to see Jordan play live a couple of times, cover some games he was in, and all that good stuff. I've seen LeBron. I actually saw LeBron's first game after he was drafted. It was a summer league game in Boston. But I love watching the Golden State Warriors play. I love what they're about. I love the way they go about their business. I love hearing Kerr and Curry and Thompson and Iguodala and Green talk after games. But I got to tell you, when that game four, doesn't surprise me necessarily that the Raptors are up 3-1 without KD, but I was surprised at what happened in game four. You know, if you told me, hey, the Raps are up 3-1 and they had to win game four by 4 points, and I would go, whew, okay. But, man, I was surprised to see them win by that many points. And I don't know, have you seen the Oracle Arena in this recent run feel that way?
No, it was very there was no life in the team. In fact, I was very surprised. It looked like they took a punch in the stomach. But that, I've got to give the Raptors credit on that. I thought they were terrific in that second half. You know, they hit 8 threes. They shot 50%. The Warriors had no answer for it. And I think they get in trouble when they start doubling Kawhi Leonard. He gets that ball out. And, of course, he and Ibaka ran the pick and roll. And Ibaka would flip that screen there. And all of a sudden, Kawhi Leonard would hit him with the ball. And then they were playing 3-on-2 the rest of the way, and the Warriors just could not handle that. And of course, Ibaka had a great shooting night. You know, came out of the closet there and surprised everybody. And he's capable So he was the difference in the game. But in the difference in the series has been Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've never been able to stop him. And he's had, you know, maybe not a great shooting night here and there, but he can manages to get his points because he puts pressure on the defense and he gets to the free throw line. He's an incredible player at getting to the free throw line, and the Warriors keep reaching. And they have to understand that Kawhi Leonard is strong. He puts his mitts on that ball. You're not going to dislodge it, and you go striking at it. It just hits his arms. He's not going to lose the ball. He's not going to turn it over. In fact, he did not have one turnover in Game 4, as much pressure as they put on him and as much as they're reaching and doing those things. So the Warriors have to play a little smarter defense. But they haven't had the best defense they had was in Game 2 here in Toronto, where they came out in that third quarter and shut down the Raptors for so long a period. But since that time, they haven't proven to me that they can consistently stop the Raptors. I think the Warriors have only won out of, 16 quarters. I believe they've only won three quarters out of all of the 16. Maybe. I don't think any more than that. But anyway, Kawhi Leonard's been, right to me, he's been the MVP of this series. He's been absolutely remarkable. And he's gotten the great off-the-bench play. In fact, that's why you're starting him in the second half each of the last couple of games. Fred VanVleet, somebody that's not drafted. All of a sudden, you know, in Game 3, Danny Green and Lowry came alive with three-pointers, and you guys, the Raptors made 17 threes. So the Warriors have to defend the three-point line better. They did a better job first half, made a low-scoring game in Game 4, but the second half, they had no chance. And I've never seen Toronto play better, and I think that confidence is building for them. So even if Durant does play, and even if Curry doesn't get double teamed, as I said before, it wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors won and they went on 1-3 straight. Mm-hmm. But it would not surprise me if tonight Toronto wrapped it up as well. This is no team. They're not going to back down. I think they're mentally tough too. The Warriors are definitely mentally tough. But I see that gaining momentum with Toronto as well.
Jim Barnett is Warriors TV analyst on NBC Sports Bay Area. So far, Kawhi Leonard in this series is averaging just under 32 points a game against the Warriors. LeBron had 32 in 2017. He had 34 in 2018. Lost both of those to Golden State. Is Kawhi given? I don't know if this is an unfair question, but has Kawhi given Golden State a harder time than LeBron did?
Yes, because he controls the game like LeBron did a lot, but LeBron controlled the ball much, much more. The ball was in his hands a greater percentage of the time, and it was almost at times like he didn't trust anybody else. And of course, they had some injuries too.
Sure.
You know, Kevin Love was hurt. You know, Kyrie Irving at different times. They're different players. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard is a better shooter than LeBron James. LeBron James is more powerful and can dominate, can go get to the basket, you know, a little easier. He's more explosive. Leonard is he's a quiet killer up there. I really, really respect him. He just is so strong in his game. And by the way, the Canadians. So I've always loved Canadians. I believe you're the greatest people in the world. And I've known a few Canadians in my life. I've been around a long time. And it's a privilege for this team to come up here. It's so fun to see all the excitement and what have you. But the Warriors know that they're not just playing a city in Toronto. They're playing a country in Canada. And it's really exciting like this. So it's exciting for everybody all around. And I don't know what the reason I'm saying that, I don't know why Kawhi Leonard, if you win the championship, I mean, why would he want to go anywhere else to get a team like this? And you're still young enough, you can come back. And the way he's been embraced here, it's just terrific. It's a great story. And I just hope that he doesn't, as a free agent, take that option and go somewhere else and just stays here. And I think it's a great place for him, and he's been embraced by your fans and all the people around. So It's a great series, and I do hope it extends. I hope it extends. And then, as I say, nothing surprises me in this league. I've just seen too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to have it come back. And I love coming to Toronto. I'd love to come back for a game 7. I guarantee you.
I think people echo your sentiments about Kawhi. Not certain about game 7, with all due respect, Jim. You're welcome here anytime. I think Raptors fans would, they would mind, how do I put it? They would mind not seeing you again. And I mean that nicely. At least this year.
Of course. I don't blame them. Yeah, you got to get greedy.
Exactly. Hey, have you seen stuff out of Nick Nurse in this series that has surprised you? Like, what has he been able to do to have success against some of the stuff Steve Kerr does that maybe other coaches haven't been able to do?
Well, you know, I liked his box and one. He surprised the Warriors that box and one. And he caught him off guard.
Yep.
And caught everybody off guard. Everybody was talking about that. What I like about Nick Nurse is, even under duress, he doesn't panic. And he seems very, very calm. He seems very confident. And I like his confidence. And I think that permeates into the team and the players. I don't know him that well. But he seems confident in himself. And he seems confident in his team. And he says the right. He's like Steve Kerr. He says the right things all the time. He's a good communicator. Doesn't BS. He doesn't beat around the bush. He's pretty pragmatic and honest about things. But he also, you can tell, he expects his team to win. He expects his team to play well. He expects them to win. I think he empowers your team. And he tries different things. You know, sometimes I see a little more of Norman Powell. He threw Patrick McCaw out there for God knows why. But doggone, he knocked out a three that one game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny. So I don't think he's afraid to try something. He certainly doesn't coach and live in fear.
Jim, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me on the show. We'll see what tonight brings.
Well, we may see you back for game 7. Take care. Jim Barnett is a Warriors TV analyst in NBC Sports Bay Area. We appreciate Jim joining us. He is one of our favorites. And yeah, and like I said, there's a way you beat a team like the Golden State Warriors. And I'm kind of with Jim on this. If Kevin Durant plays tonight, and the Warriors win, you know, this is. There's something about the Warriors' run, sort of the spirituality of their run, if you want to call it that, and how they have represented the city of Oakland and how they've represented kind of an ideal. Let's face it, you know, if Karl Marx had a favorite basketball team, it would be the Golden State Warriors. A bit left politically, right? Steve Kerr's a bit left politically. You know, Steph Curry, they've got, I know the money they're making is a little thing, but maybe they'd be bourgeoisie. But what I mean by that is politically they're woke, I guess is the way to put it. They get some of the wider issues in society. They're not afraid to talk about the wider issues in society, all that good stuff. So this is not a dynasty that I necessarily, you know, I won't be happy to see this go if that's what happens here. But I am with Jim on this, man. If they, if Kevin Durant plays and they win, they go back to game 5 in Oakland, you know, then that will be the final game in Oakland if they go back there. They are moving across the bay to San Francisco. There may be a little bit of an emotional edge to that. Maybe that's enough, you know, for a team that's played so much basketball in recent years. There may be that little emotional edge of the final game in Oakland, which is, you know, a very politically, you know, there is a very strong political bent to living in Oakland. Of course, it was the home of the Black Panthers. It's a there's a lot there. It's a very textured city, and the Warriors represent the best of that city, the way they handle themselves and the way they quit themselves. So there may be something there involved going back when you go back to Oakland for a sixth game if it does get that to that point. So yeah, I'm with Jim in this. If you're the Raptors and Kevin Durant play tonight, you want to take care of business tonight. Mark Kestisher is the voice of the NBA Finals on ESPN Radio. It's a terrific crew. ESPN Radio has Hubie Brown, Hall of Fame coach, one of the really great people in sports. John Barry, part of their crew as well. Mark Kestisher will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Michael, NBC Sports Bay Area. Steve, the other night in game four, the first quarter defense was phenomenal, took a lot of energy. Just wondering, though, as good as Kevin is, well, just having, if he's able to go, just having the extra body make a difference in terms of the energy required to defend this team?
For sure, for sure. So that's what we're hoping is the case, but we'll see. But there's no doubt all that stuff matters. I think we just keep saying we got to just play with whoever's out there, and that's the truth. But it's, you know, last game was Clay and Loon was a much better indicator of our team than game three was. And so we had a better opportunity, and we were more competitive. We didn't get it done, but you know, you get to feel like more like yourself as a team, and the rotation stays similar and all that stuff. So that's what we're hoping for, but we'll see how it all plays out.
That's Warriors head coach Steve Kerr yesterday, ahead of tonight's game five of the NBA Finals, which you can see on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet One. Tip-off will be just after 9 p.m. Basketball Central at 8:30 p.m. with Faye Williams and Hamilton. And, of course, we'll have our Raptors pregame with Russick and Goldberg, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The fan, the Raptors in a position to give Toronto its first title in a major North American sport since 1993 when the Toronto Blue Jays beat Philadelphia Phillies. Been a long time coming. It's been a long time to even get to this point where we can realistically consider the possibility of a championship. Mark Kestisher has had the call of the NBA Finals on ESPN, along with Hall of Famer Hubie Brown and John Barry. Mark Kestisher joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mark, thanks so much for taking time out of a busy day to do this. I know you guys have a meeting, production meeting coming up, so I'll make this very quick. I'll just ask you, how surprised are you that we are in Toronto with the Raptors leading three games to one, and in a position to wrap up this series within five games?
Well, Jeff, it's good to be on with you this afternoon, or this morning, I guess. To answer the question, yeah, I mean, I think of two things. One, I think of where we were in Milwaukee about 3 weeks ago when Giannis and the Bucks stomped on the Raptors in game two. Remember, after the tough loss in game one, it's 2-0. The basketball world is talking about what a superior matchup the Bucks might be against Golden State. The Raptors were kind of an afterthought, and I guess the second angle of it is, you know, I've been asked for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, maybe since Kevin Durant signed on, you know, can anyone beat the Warriors in the finals? And I said, I just don't think anybody can beat that team four times in seven games. And look, there are mitigating factors, and I know Raptors fans won't want to hear, you know, the injury excuses, because Golden State has certainly beaten teams who have had those same injuries. But, you know, those obviously are circumstances, and I give the Raptors so much credit for that double overtime win against Milwaukee in game three when Kyle Lowry had fouled out in regulation, for the role players stepping up from that point forward. you know, to just, you know, the guy who is Kawhi Leonard, who is one of the best basketball players on earth, and he's here in Toronto for this season and hopefully for more moving forward. We'll see what happens. And so, yes, no one could ever have envisioned game five in Toronto with a chance to end the reign of the Warriors in five games. So, yeah, it is pretty remarkable, and what a night it's going to be.
You know, we just had Jim Barnett on, and we were talking about Kawhi's series and comparing the series LeBron had against Golden State Warriors, the two series he's had, where he scored, he averaged more points than Kawhi, but lost both those series. And it really does kind of put in context just the fact that we're seeing a historically good series from Kawhi Leonard. And it's almost like we kind of accept it, Mark, because, you know, Kawhi, you talk to Kawhi and it's like it's January 12th and they've just finished playing Atlanta. No disrespect to Atlanta, but yeah, I got 31 points and, you know, we got another game coming up. This Toronto team really has adopted his sort of stony look, business as usual persona, hasn't it?
They have, and it's a great way to get through the rigors of professional sports, you know, with social media 24/7, with regional sports networks, national sports networks 24/7. You can get caught up reading about how great you are or, you know, listening to all the criticism. And to just, you know, folks, like as a broadcaster, I'm a fan like anybody else. And you see the big picture and you talk the big storylines. But you really can't do that when you're a player because it really is, as cliche as it sounds, game by game, quarter by quarter, segment by segment, minute by minute. You can't look ahead and you can't get down when you lose and you can't believe you're great when you win because it can change in a heartbeat. And to have a guy who sets the tone like Leonard, who truly, I believe you. It's December. It's Atlanta, and I don't need to score 50. I don't want to be the MVP. I want to lead my team and have all my guys play their part. And when the game is decided, I don't need to go out there and pad my stats, and I don't need people to tell me how great I am. And to have that guy be the leader of your team and set the tone, you know, if the Raptors can get this done. Will certainly be the hallmark and something you'll remember of a championship team.
Mark, I want to ask you this topic because, you know, we've had this discussion around here about asterisks and, you know, people talk about Kevin Durant not playing, et cetera, but, you know, there is one thing I really believe, and I don't think this is an excuse for Golden State, but, I mean, look, I covered baseball. I saw the Yankees when their dynasty came to an end. The Chicago Blackhawks, we see it in hockey. I think we tend to underestimate how much wear and tear all those extra playoff games put, you know, how much they put on a team that goes to the playoffs every year and goes on a deep run. Like, yeah, sports science is great now. It's far ahead. But that's so much wear and tear in those bodies. And I just think it catches up to guys after a while. I think it catches up to everybody.
No, I agree. Someone had a stat. I don't have it in front of me, but I think Klay Thompson, and you could probably lump Steph Curry in there, have probably played, you know, 50 extra games than anybody over this stretch. And Curry was exhausted the other day. Now, yeah, he went, you know, extra without Klay Thompson in game three. There was only one day off between the two games. But your larger point is accurate. It's a long road. It's the reason why, you know, it's unprecedented. I mean, the Celtics were the only other team to go to five straight finals. And it's, you know, it can be construed as making an excuse when things aren't going well. But I don't think you can completely eliminate the fact that it is an accumulation. And I'll say this. I remember being in Steve Kerr's office before opening day. We always do the first broadcast of the year nationally, and it's usually the championship team. So it was the Warriors at home to unfurl their latest banner. And I asked Steve Kerr if there was one thing that concerns him about this year's team, what would it be? And he said, I don't think we're as deep as we used to be. Sean Livingston's getting older. They didn't really have much center depth. Patrick McCaw, remember, at that point hadn't re-signed, and so they bring in Alphonso McKinney, who's untested. Mm-hmm. So Jordan Bell had, kind of taken a step backwards. DeMarcus Cousins, we don't know what we're going to get because he's not coming back till January. So I think they're top-heavy. I think they always have been. I think the Portland series kind of masked a few of those problems because, quite frankly, the Trailblazers weren't as complete of a team as Houston may have been and as Toronto is right now. So you're right. The accumulation and the fact that, the bench got older and thinner definitely, when in the final analysis, will probably agree with your premise.
I think the NBA is, and this is a wider question, general question, I think the NBA is ready for a Canadian championship team.
That's a great question because, this might sound odd. I grew up in upstate New York, so I'm not that far from Canada, and I live in Connecticut, not far away. But I don't think of it being international. Mm-hmm. Toronto, I just think of North American sports, right? So I don't know if it's, Olympics hockey, USA versus Canada, us versus them. I don't ever get that sense. If anything, surprisingly, because the Warriors have been the darlings for so long, it's almost the anti, hey, it's time for the big team to get knocked off. It's, have the crown get knocked off. And so maybe people are flocking. Mm-hmm. To the Raptors and a fun style of basketball, but I don't know if they see it as a Canadian victory as much as it should be heralded up here. As you said, 93 is a long time. I was at a wedding. I was still unmarried. I remember being at a wedding the night in Dallas, the night the Blue Jays beat the Phillies, and I was a very young man, a lot thinner with a lot of hair. So that was an awful long time ago.
Mark, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. I know you got a scoot to meeting. Really enjoyed your work this postseason. Thanks again.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. And good luck to the Raptors fans tonight.
Thank you. That's Mark Kestershire of ESPN. And, as I mentioned, if you listen to the show, I'm a big Hubie Brown fan. I told Hubie one time I spent my honeymoon with him. It isn't entirely true, but we went to New York on our honeymoon, and part of the trade-off for the stuff that I was going to spend the next 2 days doing was that we had to go to an NBA game. So we got great tickets behind the Knicks bench to see Hubie and the Knicks take on the 76ers. And I remember telling Hubie that one time in the air, and he said, "I bet we lost that game, didn't we?" And in point of fact, yeah, they got creamed. But that's beside the point. Anyhow, Mark Kestershire and Hubie Brown and John Barry, terrific trio doing terrific work on ESPN. They've had the call throughout the series, and I forgot about that, actually. They were on the Raptors and Milwaukee Bucks. So they've seen an awful lot of the Raptors. And that's why I said, the whole discussion about how the U.S. media is handling the Raptors on the verge. As I said, a lot of the areas you listen to, a lot of the people you listen to, a lot of the different outlets you listen to, they're fine with it. They really are, and I think a lot of people are intrigued by the manner with which the Raptors have taken care of business through four games. I don't think, even those people who believed the Raptors were capable of winning this series, I guarantee you very few of them thought we would have had a game four with a 14-point difference where the score flattered, and it did. The score flattered Golden State. There have been a couple of times in this series where the score has flattered Golden State. I don't think people saw that coming. Would it be entirely out of the question the Raptors would be up 3-1 against this team? No. But I don't think people expected the Raptors to be as workmanlike, as methodical, as cold-blooded as they've been in this series. And again, I get back to this. These scores have flattered Golden State. This series has not been as close as the score has indicated that it has been. It's been much more one-sided. And, Jim Barnett made the point. The Raps have won 13 of 16 quarters. Like, this is not through four games. It's been a particularly close series. And my point is that that has been the tone of the discussion from a lot of the national commentators in the U.S. I think people are much more comfortable with the idea of the Raptors as an NBA championship team than we might give them credit for. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it comes from the fact that people do like to see the champion have his crown knocked off, his or her crown knocked off every now and then. That's part of sports. You know, the underdog story. But I think people who are watching this series have been marveling at the way Kawhi Leonard has played. They've been marveling at what they've seen from the Raptors in terms of preparation, in terms of intensity, in terms of their offensive efficiency and the way they go about their business. And I think people are kind of getting a kick out of Jurassic Park and seeing how happy this championship run has made this city. You know, and seeing it happen in an urban environment, an arena that's right downtown. It's not out by the freeway, right? It's right downtown. There's a real sense of dynamism, a real sense of energy to what we're seeing from the Raptors and the Raptors fans. And you know what? I can tell you, it transfers very well on TV. It looks good on TV. So, again, I think people are probably a little more comfortable with what we've seen and what we may see tonight than we tend to give them credit for. So I will give you a rundown of what is happening on the station today. We'll have Raptors coverage all day long. Ben and JD, good show, will be in here in a couple of minutes. They'll take you through noon to 4. Hockey Central will still be on TV. It'll be on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet Now. But on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, you'll get a special 4-hour good show with Ennis and Bunkus. Tim and Sid, Primetime Sports, of course, will pick up the mantle from JD and Ben. Tim and Sid on the TV side, they will be live at Jurassic Park, 6 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we will have a Raptors pregame with Russick and Goldberg, 7 p.m. That'll go right up, that'll go through the night. Basketball Central with Fay, Williams, and Hamilton at 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1. Tip-off will be just after 9 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1. And then the wrap presented by Comda.com with Russick and Goldberg right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And if the Raptors are to win tonight, if the Raptors do win tonight, stay tuned because we will be all over the Raptors 24/7 for the next couple of days. So stick with Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we will make sure that you are covered all the way. The Blue Jays, not talked about them. The Blue Jays have today off. They will start a road trip with the first of three against the Baltimore Orioles on Tuesday. That game will be on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The NHL, Game 7 of that series will go Wednesday on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Hockey Central's pregame will be at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop will be just after 8 o'clock on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario as the Stanley Cup playoffs move to their conclusion with a Game 7. And the Bruins 5-1 winners over the St. Louis Blues last night. Did not see that performance coming. But there you go. Game 7 will be Wednesday. So that is it for us. Could be quite a night tonight. The Raptors in a position to win this city's first major North American title since the 1993 World Series. Not to shortchange Toronto FC for their win, for their MLS Cup win. By any stretch of the imagination, not to shortchange the Argonauts for their Grey Cup wins, but I mean, the fact of the matter is the NBA Finals, as I said, in terms of worldwide exposure, in terms of depth of resonance, I think, surpasses those two events. You know, we can have the discussion tomorrow if the Raptors win as to where it ranks in Canadian and Toronto sports history, and I'm sure we will. And that will be controversial, and there'll be a lot of opinions. And believe me, there's room for everybody's opinion in that regard. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Game five tonight. If you're at Jurassic Park, stay dry. And I know it's going to be hard given the weather forecast, but stay dry. Be nice to each other. And same thing tonight. If the Raptors do win, if they do wrap up the NBA Finals, don't embarrass yourselves. If we've seen anything from this run, we've seen how much of a good time, how much of a party the Raptors' success has been, not just in Toronto, but in all the various Jurassic Parks that have sprung up around the country, the viewing parties. It has been a great national ride, and it would be unfortunate if anything were to happen to spoil that. So, again, if the Raptors do win tonight, have fun, stay safe, be good to each other, and above all, tune in tomorrow to Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We will have you covered. Trust me, we will have you covered all day long. We don't often get a chance to see history being made in front of us, and we don't often get a chance to walk through history with each other. Tonight could be one of those nights. The Toronto Raptors in position to win the NBA crown, something that I'm sure many, many Raptors fans thought would never occur. Could be one of the greatest nights in Toronto sports history. Could be the greatest night in an entire generation. So again, everybody have fun, treat each other well, stay safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's been the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.